This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on Wednesday. Lord willing, and everything, you know, works, we are going to have Adrian Shelley, the director of Public Citizen Texas, in our second hour talking about what's going on down there, and the one of the world's most famous climate scientists, Dr. Michael Mann, the inventor of the hockey stick that Al Gore popularized, will be with us at the bottom of the second hour to talk about how the weather that is hitting Texas right now is actually a function of global warming, and we'll get into all that. Marcos Melitzis is going to drop by in our third hour to talk about the brilliance of the Democrats' proposal for a $3,600 tax credit. I want to expand that conversation somewhat. And, you know, so there's a lot going on. But to open the show, I really want to talk about how Texas and what's going on with the collapse of the energy system in Texas, the collapse of the social safety net all across the United States, 40 years of paralysis in terms of rebuilding and maintaining this nation's infrastructure, the perpetual lies being told by the Republican Party across a whole spectrum of issues, from coronavirus lies to global warming lies to Trump lost the election, won the election, whatever lies, are all the same thing. And they're all coming out of this one same place, which is this idea that was popularized back in the 1950s by Milton Friedman out of the University of Chicago, and Ayn Rand and Hayek and others, von Mises, that markets are the solution to everything. Government is always going to screw things up. If you want things to work, you have to always rely on markets, which is a fancy way, a very elegant kind of dressing for the argument that we should not be governing ourselves, which is democracy. Instead, we should be governed by those who have the most economic control in the marketplace, the oligarchs. It's an argument for oligarchy, essentially. And what that does is it leads to an absolute disintegration of anything that doesn't make a profit. If the one thing that you're always looking at is how do we maximize short-term profits, all the long-term goals that you would otherwise have, like making sure, for example, that your electric generation system down in Texas is capable of dealing with cold weather. And this is not, I mean, yes, it's a historic cold, but this is not the first time that the system in Texas has collapsed like this. Back in 2011, this happened. It got really cold in Texas. And as a consequence, again, the moisture in the natural gas lines froze up and the flow of natural gas radically dropped. And as a result of that, the power plants that were running on natural gas, and people's homes for that matter, couldn't get enough gas, and you know, it was a crisis. In fact, it happened several times. It happened in 1989 as well. And in both cases, the federal government came in and looked at the situation. Federal energy officials, this is and what they found was that there was a complete failure here to winterize these systems, to be capable of dealing with these kinds of problems. And what did the Texas utilities do? These for-profit utilities that are looking at, you know, short-term profits rather than long-term concerns, they just shrugged. They said, "Man, not our problem." You know, doing that. The same thing, by the way, happened in California. California, you have got PG&E, which is a for-profit corporation that got spun out of Enron, as you'll recall, and you know, while they were paying literally multi-million dollar bonuses and salaries to senior executives and billions in dividends to their stockholders, which is what for-profit companies do, they were not maintaining their power lines. They were not putting power lines underground where they might not be subject to high winds or to wildfires. They were not doing just basic maintenance. The same thing has been happening in Texas. And now, of course, we've got, you know, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, just, you know, lying through his teeth. You know, this shows how the Green New Deal would be a deadly deal for the United States of America, Greg Abbott said. Our wind and our solar got shut down, and they were collectively more than 10% of our power grid, and that thrust Texas into a situation where it was lacking power on a statewide basis. It shows fossil fuel is necessary. Well, that's like, there's a whole bunch of lies in there. Out of the 10,000 windmills in Texas, about 300 of them shut down, as far as I can find from public reporting, first of all. Secondly, wind turbines like that, like the ones that shut down in Texas, being run by private for-profit utilities, those same kinds of wind turbines are running right now in Greenland and Sweden and Norway and northern Germany, where it's a hell of a lot colder than it is in Texas, and they're not freezing up. Why? Because they're being properly maintained. Because they were anticipating the possibility of this kind of thing happening. Because it routinely happens, you know, up in the Arctic Circle in Norway. But, you know, hey, it would have cost a little bit more money. It would have meant that they couldn't give their executives big bonuses. It would have meant that the various power companies in Texas that were deregulated back in the 1980s, I believe it was, Texas said, that's it. We're going to disconnect our grid from all these states around us, and we're going to go our own way because the federal government wants to regulate our electricity. The federal government wants to have a say in how reliable our electricity is, and we're going to have nothing to do with that. And the consequence of that is what we're seeing right now. And, you know, there's numerous, I mean, over in the Washington Post here, this is just remarkable. It's the financial structure for power generation that offers no incentives to power plant operators to prepare for winter in the name of deregulation and free markets. And this, by the way, is also happening in Oklahoma and Louisiana, where they've got somewhat similar situations. They haven't completely blocked themselves off from other states. But, you know, there has been no shortage of studies over the years. We've had a number of people on talking about this over the years. In fact, it was a major topic of conversation on this program back during the California wildfires, that when utilities are run by the people, when utilities are owned and run by government, by the state government, by county governments, by city governments, when they are utilities, actual utilities, when they have surplus money, they use that money to upgrade their systems. I mean, what else are you going to do with it? You can't just shovel it out the door to your stockholders because you don't have any stockholders. And so publicly owned utilities, and you can Google this, publicly owned utilities are much more reliable, much less likely to suffer, you know, shutdowns and meltdowns like this. But I 7 o'clock Pacific time this morning, I flipped on Fox News just to see what they were, and their lead story, the opening sentences, windmill shutdown in Texas causing crisis, or words to that effect. Meanwhile, we've got a mayor in Texas. I'll tell you about this. And it brings us back to this old Joe Republican story that we talked about on this program back in 2004. And I want to revisit that as well, because we're back there. I mean, this is, we're cycling back through this whole let's to hell with the commons ideology that the Republicans have been embracing since the 1980s. This is, you know, we are living in the world that Ronald Reagan created. I don't know how to put it other than that. It's pretty straightforward. I also want to talk about adding 3 states to the union, something that I wrote about today over at Medium.com. We'll get to all of that in just a moment. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. We'll be right back. Exposing the con in conservatism. So last night, Tucker Carlson on Fox News said that the state's power grid had, quote, become totally reliant on windmills. No, it's about 10% of the state's power. Rick Perry, then, after Tucker Carlson, you know, leads with this. Rick Perry, you know, the former governor, comes out and was, you know, energy secretary under Trump for a short while. Although the Energy Department doesn't supervise things like this, they supervise nuclear weapons mostly. But anyhow, Rick Perry comes out and goes, "Yeah, yeah, it's the Green New Deal." He says, "If this Green New Deal goes forward the way that the Biden administration appears to want it to, then we'll have more events like we've had in Texas, all across the country." And then this Republican from Texas, Dan Crenshaw, he comes out and says that, well, actually, natural gas and nuclear power were also a problem. But then he summarizes by saying, "Bottom line, thank God for baseload energy made of fossil fuels. Had our grid been more reliant on the wind turbines that froze, the outages would have been much worse." And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is the originator of the Green New Deal idea, which is not yet legislation. I mean, there's still debate about what does the Green New Deal mean. But anyhow, she comes out and she says, "The infrastructure failures in Texas are quite literally what happens when you don't pursue a Green New Deal." And she's absolutely right. If your entire power generation system is dependent on fossil fuels, first of all, you're adding to the global warming, the very global warming that is causing the crisis that we're having right now, that Texas is having right now. You're simply adding to that problem, number one. And number two, a good chunk of this, I mean, you know, maybe with the coal-fired power plants, they could just shovel more coal in, although that's really insanely dirty, poisons people, causes, you know, downwind asthmas and lung cancer, all kinds of cancers from burning coal, and leaves behind coal ash, they call it fly ash, the stuff that's radioactive and poisonous for like a million years. And nobody's figured out how to get rid of that. There's giant piles of it around coal-fired power plants all over the country that, you know, presumably our government is going to have to pay to clean up. You got coal companies, you know, going bankrupt, literally going bankrupt just to avoid paying the cost of cleanup, whether it's the mines in West Virginia or whether it's the coal-fired power plants that are being shut down. We talked about this a few weeks ago. There was a whole thing in the Financial Times about this, just laying it all out. But then also, you know, relying on natural gas. Oh, yeah, natural gas is going to back us all up. Well, not so much when the natural gas freezes, because natural gas has moisture in it. And so you know, if you don't insulate your pipelines, which Texas didn't bother to do, because they're like, well, you know, this only happens once in a while. It happened in 2011, it happened in 1989. I mean, that's what, twice in the last 40 years, 50 years? It's not a big deal. Right. Apparently nobody told Texas that there is this thing called global warming and that it is getting worse. And the global warming does cause things like this massive cold wave. I realize it seems contradictory, but it's true. Anyhow, we'll get back to my Joe Republican rant right after this. Stick around. We're coming up on 20 minutes past the hour right here on the Tom Hartman Program, talk media for the sane left among us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And so we have this this mayor in Texas. His name is Tim Boyd. He's the mayor of Colorado City, Texas. Interesting article about this, about his rant over on the Washington Post. And this is what he posted on Facebook when in the Facebook group for his little town of Oklahoma City, Texas. Because as the Washington Post says, you know, on Tuesday morning, the residents of Colorado City, Texas were getting anxious. More than 24 hours had passed since the deadly Arctic blast, leaving them without heat or electricity and below freezing temperatures. To make matters worse, many also lacked running water, forcing them to haul in heavy buckets of snow every time they needed to flush their toilets. Residents turned to a community Facebook group to ask whether the small town planned to open warming shelters, while others warned if firefighters could do the job without water. But then Tim Boyd, the mayor of Colorado City, chimes in. This is on this Facebook group. He says, let me hurt some feelings while I have a minute. No one owes you or your family anything. Nor is it the local government's responsibility to support you during trying times like this. Exclamation mark. Sink or swim, it's your choice! Exclamation mark. Don't you get that? I mean, you know, yeah, you chose global warming. You voted for Republicans. Anyhow, Tim Boyd goes on. The city and county, along with power providers of any other service, owe you nothing. And nothing is in all caps with an exclamation mark at the end. I'm sick and tired, he said, of people looking for a damn handout. If you don't have electricity, you step up and come up with a game plan to keep your family warm and safe. If you have no water, you deal without. And think outside the box. How to survive and how to supply water to your family. Right. You got no water? Just think outside the box. No problem. You can do that, right? I mean, thinking outside the box is not that big a deal. So just it's quite simple. All you have to do is just say, I'm gonna think outside the box. I'm gonna come up with a new way to get water. Maybe you could, go out and buy a tank of oxygen and a tank of hydrogen and burn them together and which will produce water as a byproduct. Go out and get some snow and let it melt on your stomach. In any case, he says, come up with, you need to think outside the box. He says, if you're sitting at home in the cold because you have no power and you're sitting there waiting for someone to come rescue you because you're lazy, it's the direct result of your raising. Oh, it's people's upbringings. That's it. This is the story. This whole, personal responsibility story is the story that Republicans have been using for literally centuries. Now, I shouldn't say Republicans, I should say conservatives, because, prior to the 1960s, the Democrats were the party, along with Republicans, who were pushing this kind of stuff. But, and racializing it. Oh, yeah, it's not because, The reason that my dad, for example, could get a college education and a loan to buy a house out of the GI Bill after he got out of World War II, and a friend of mine who's African American, his black dad couldn't, is because he just didn't have he was raised wrong, right? I mean that's the story that they told us in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, and they're still telling us, the Republicans. If you don't have what you want, it's your raising. Mayor Tim Boyd goes on, only the strong will survive and the weak will perish. And he spells perish, P-A-R-I-S-H. I don't know if he means they're going to go live in a church or what, but anyhow. He says, folks, God has given us the tools to support ourselves in times like this. And those tools would be? He says, this is sadly a product of a socialist government where they feed people to believe that the few will work and others will become dependent for handouts. Am I sorry that you've been dealing without electricity and water? Yes. But I'll be damned if I'm going to provide for anyone that's capable of doing it for themselves. See, the city might not have planned for this. Tim Boyd, the mayor, might not have planned for this, but you should have had a diesel generator in your backyard with 100 gallons of diesel fuel, well insulated, ready to... Right. He says, we have lost sight of those in need and those that take advantage of the system and meshed them into one group. Well, again, this is Ronald Reagan's welfare queen thing, right? Remember when Ronald Reagan famously said, doesn't it upset you when some young buck in front of you in line at the supermarket is buying beer and steaks with his food stamps? Young buck, of course, meaning exactly what you assume it means. The mayor finally wraps this up. He says, bottom line, quit crying and looking for a handout. Get off your ass and take care of your family. Don't be part of the problem, be part of the solution. Yes, cliches will solve everything. After the break, I want to share with you this Joe Republican rant from some time back, and we will continue with the program. Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here. We'll be right back. So back in 2004, in the second year of this program, a fellow by the name of John Gray in Cincinnati, Ohio, or at least that's how it was attributed on the internet. This thing went wildly viral in 2004, and you can still find echoes of it all over the internet. Wrote a piece or a blog called A Day in the Life of Middle-Class Joe Middle-Class Republican. And in it, he kind of laid out the exact conundrum. And keep in mind, this was 16 years ago, 17 years ago, that he wrote this. Assuming that he's the author of it. I mean, it's been attributed to other people as well over the years. Some people have attributed it to me. I did not originate this, although I had been talking it for some time. And in fact, I wrote several books. Screwed is probably the best book that essentially says the same thing, but, you know, in many more words. But I just want to share this with you because it just, you know, I think it encapsulates exactly what's going on in Texas right now, in Louisiana, in Oklahoma, the power utility situation in California. This is not a problem unique to blue states or red states. This is a problem that has to do with this fundamental debate in America about what is government? Why do we create governments? What is the goal of government? But I'll get back to that in a minute. This is a day in the life of Joe Republican. Joe gets up at 6 a.m. to prepare his morning coffee. He fills his pot full of good, clean drinking water because some liberal fought for minimum water quality standards. He takes his daily medication with his first swallow of coffee. His medications are safe to take because some liberal fought to ensure that they're safe and their work is advertised. You realize, of course, that was not always the case. All but $10 of his medications are paid for by his employer's medical plan because some liberal union workers fought their employers for paid medical insurance, and now Joe gets it too. He prepares his morning breakfast, bacon and eggs this day. Joe's bacon is safe to eat. You know, it used to be contaminated with trichinomiasis and things. Joe's bacon is safe to eat because some liberal fought for laws to regulate the meatpacking industry. Joe takes his morning shower, reaching for his shampoo. His bottle is properly labeled with every ingredient and the amount of its contents because some liberal fought for his right to know what he was putting on his body and how much it contained. Joe dresses, walks outside, takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some tree-hugging liberal fought for laws to stop industries from polluting our air. He walks to the subway station for his government-subsidized ride to work. Saves him considerable money in parking and transportation fees. You see, some liberal fought for affordable public transportation, which gives everyone the opportunity to be a contributor. Joe begins his workday. He has a good job with excellent pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays, and vacations because some liberal union members fought and died for these working standards. Joe's employer pays these standards because Joe's employer doesn't want his employees to call in the union. If Joe is hurt on the job or becomes unemployed, he'll get a workers' compensation check or unemployment check because some liberal didn't think he should lose his home because of a temporary misfortune. It's noontime. Joe needs to make a bank deposit so he can pay some bills. Joe's deposit is federally insured by the FSLIC because some liberal wanted to protect Joe's money from unscrupulous bankers who ruined the banking system before the Great Depression. Joe has to pay off his Fannie Mae underwritten mortgage and his below-market federal student loan because some stupid liberal decided that Joe and the government would be better off if he was educated and earned more money over his lifetime. Joe is home from work. He plans to visit his father this evening at the farm home out in the country where he grew up. He gets in his car to drive out to Dad's. His car is among the safest in the world because some liberal fought for safety standards. He arrives at his boyhood home. He is the third generation to live in a house financed by the Farmers Home Administration because banksters didn't want to make rural loans. The house didn't even have electricity until some big government liberal stuck his nose where it didn't belong and demanded rural electrification. He's happy to see his dad, who's now retired. His dad lives on Social Security and his union pension because some liberal made sure he could take care of himself so Joe wouldn't have to. After his visit with Dad, he gets back in the car for the ride home. Joe turns on the talk radio. Turns on the radio to a talk show, and the host keeps saying that liberals are bad and conservatives are good. Joe agrees. We don't need those big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves, just like I have. Right. John Gray, 2004, Cincinnati, Ohio, is the reference to that. And it's not just me pointing this out, and it's not just you noticing this. All around the world, people are looking at the United States and going, oh my God. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the 4 years of insanity under the last guy. I'm going to start using Joe Biden's. Last night, Joe Biden did a town hall on CNN, and Anderson Cooper asked him a couple of questions about the former president. And Biden used his name once and said, I don't much like talking about him. And then after that, he always referred to him as the last guy or the one guy who hasn't called me. But you're familiar with The Lancet? The Lancet is the most highly respected medical journal in the world. It has a better reputation than the Journal of the American Medical Association, even. I mean, The Lancet is like really, really well known. And they have this thing called the Lancet Commission on Public Policy and Health. And, you know, they offer, their job is to offer suggestions to legislatures, you know, to the British Parliament or just to publish stuff in The Lancet. The Lancet is peer-reviewed. Everything that's published in there has been evaluated by scientists and determined to be, you know, through a consensus, determined to be what it says it is. So let me just share with you this. This is from The Lancet. You can find it on their website, thelancet.com. This report by the Lancet Commission on Public Policy and Health in the Trump era assesses the repercussions of President Donald Trump's health-related policies and examines the failures and social schisms that enabled his election. And then they get right into it. It's very straightforward. This is kind of the abstract, the summary. Trump exploited low and middle-income white people's anger over their deteriorating life prospects to mobilize racial animus and xenophobia and enlist their support for policies that benefit high-income people and corporations and threaten health. That's the opening sentence of this report from The Lancet. His signature legislative achievement, a $1 trillion tax cut for corporations and high-income individuals, opened a budget hole that Trump used to justify cutting food subsidies and health care. His appeals to racism, nativism, and there's a word missing here because of the way that this thing printed out, have emboldened white nationalists and encouraged police violence. And toward the end of his term in office, insurrection. Again, they're looking at this as a public health issue. Trump chose judges for U.S. courts who are dismissive of affirmative action and reproductive labor, civil, and voting rights, ordered the mass detention of immigrants in hazardous conditions, and promulgated regulations that reduce access to abortion and contraception in the U.S. and globally, writes The Lancet Commission. Although his effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act failed, he weakened its coverage and increased the number of uninsured people in America by 2 to 3 million, even before the mass dislocation of the COVID-19 pandemic, and has accelerated the privatization of government health programs. Trump's hostility to environmental regulations have already worsened pollution, resulting in more than 22,000 extra deaths in 2019 alone, hastened global warming, and despoiled national monuments and lands sacred to Native people. Disdain for science and cuts to global health programs and public health agencies have impeded the response to the COVID-19 pandemic, causing tens of thousands of unnecessary deaths and imperiled advances against HIV and other diseases. And Trump's bellicose trade, defense, and foreign policy have led to economic disruption and threatened an upswing in armed conflict. That's it. That's the entire thing. From The Lancet, the most prestigious, most credible medical journal in the world, looking across the pond from the UK at the United States and saying, look at this Republican public health disaster. And I don't know how you can call it anything other than that, a GOP public health disaster. It's really mind-boggling when you think about it. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's talk radio for the sane among us, the Tom Hartman program, fair and only slightly unbalanced. And welcome back. Breaking news, Rush Limbaugh has passed away. He was a very talented guy. He used his talents in ways that I think were a massive net negative for America, sadly. But, you can't deny that he was a very talented guy. So was Hitler. I mean, anyway, what was it, John Donne in his poem, For Whom the Bell Tolls? He says, every man's death diminishes me, for I am involved in mankind. Therefore, ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. We're all going to confront that at some point, going into the light at the end of our time on this earth. I hope he was embraced by love and light. Anyhow, Gene Stewart is tweeting to the governor of Texas. Now, this is, on the tail end of the governor of Texas saying that the problem is windmills. It's not me, nothing I did, nothing wrong with our utilities, nothing wrong with all that natural gas that's frozen in the gas lines. No. It's the windmills. It's the Green New Deal, don't you know? That's why we're in trouble. I mean, this really creates a crisis for democracy, and in this case, for the state of Texas. When the governor of a state is lying to its people, and mayors have so bought into these lies that Limbaugh promulgated for so many years, sadly, that they are responding to their townspeople who are saying, hey, wait a minute, when are we going to get some warmth? When are we going to get some water? When are we going to get some food? I mean, people are burning their furniture in Texas right now in their fireplaces. So anyhow, Gene Stewart writes, I'm 73 years old. I live in Avondale Senior Apartments in far north Fort Worth. We have no water, no power, and the elevator is frozen, which prohibits me from leaving because I'm in a walker and I can't do stairs. We have no heat, and we have now been told to boil our water, writes this person on Twitter to the governor of Texas. And then ends this, I don't know what word to use other than tragic, tweet to the governor asking for help. Ends this tragic tweet with, how? How am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to boil water? How am I supposed to get outside? How am I supposed to do anything? Now, this mayor, Tim Boyd, has deleted his Facebook post. But he did double down. He told the press that he stands by everything he said. The one qualification he wishes he had put on it was that he didn't mean to be speaking to old people and disabled people. So there is apparently some point at which Republicans will say, well, yeah, we actually are concerned about somebody, some people. It's nuts. We'll be back. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. I did. I mentioned at the beginning of the hour that there was another topic that I wanted to get to, and it's pretty straightforward. This is the piece that I published over at tomharbin.medium.com today. Did you know that by 2024, half of America will live in the entire population of the United States will live in 8 democratically controlled states? Those states will have 16 senators out of 100. And the rest of America is going to be Republican-controlled, it seems. I mean, this could be really scary. So what do we do about this? I mean, this is a serious problem. So during the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln and his Republican Party, which at the time controlled both the House and the Senate, they needed 2 more senators to make sure that they had control of the Senate. They saw this slipping away. And this was 1864. And at that time, it took 125,000 residents to create 1 congressional district. So some states had more than 125,000 residents. So like New York or Massachusetts, you know, they had a couple of congressional districts. They had a couple of people in the House of Representatives because they had not 125,000 people, but 250,000 or more than that. You know, but for every 125,000 people, you had 1 member of the House of Representatives in 1864. And by coincidence, that number, 125,000 people, was also the cutoff, the minimum number necessary to become a state. If a territory, which is how the non-states were referred to, if a territory wanted to become a state, they had to have 125,000 people. So we are in 1864, and Abraham Lincoln needs 2 more senators. In order to become a state, it's a very simple 3-step process. Number 1, there has to be a referendum by the citizens of the states in which they vote to become a state. So the state has to, the territory has to say, we want to become a state. Number 2, somebody has to introduce legislation in the House and Senate to make that territory a state, and it passes by a simple majority. This is not a supermajority thing. And number 3, the president signs the legislation. It's that simple. But Nevada only had 7,000 people living there, at least 7,000, quote, legal residents, 7,000 people who, you know, in addition to the Native Americans there, 7,000 white people. But Lincoln needed a senator, so he said, let's do it. And sure enough, in 1864, Abraham Lincoln got 2 more senators by adding all 7,000 people in Nevada. But then 22 years later, in 1876, Ulysses S. Grant had the same problem. He needed 2 more Republican senators. And at that time, the Colorado Territory only had 40,000 people. It still required 125,000 people to be a state, but he said, screw that. And made Colorado a state in 1876. And then in 1889, when Benjamin Harrison had, after they'd kicked the Democrat Grover Cleveland out of the White House, Benjamin Harrison wanted a couple more senators. And so he took the Dakota Territory, and the entire Dakota Territory, there were 98,000 people living in what we now call South Dakota. There were 36,000 people living in what we now call North Dakota, which is a total, if my math is right, of 134,000 people, just enough to make 1 state. But Republican President Benjamin Harrison said, no, we're going to split this in half and call it North Dakota and South Dakota because I want 4 senators. And he did it. And for that reason, from 1861, when Lincoln was inaugurated, until 1933, when FDR, you know, on the heels of the Great Depression, won a landslide victory, in that entire period of time, Democrats only controlled the Senate for 8 years. because, you know, the Republicans kept doing this. Well, it's time to turn the tables on this. D.C. has more people than Wyoming and Vermont and has already had their referendum saying we want to be a state. Puerto Rico has many more people than Vermont and Wyoming together. And they've already had a referendum, and 97% of their citizens said, yes, we want to be a state. And then you got, you know, Stacey Plaskett, I think her name is, who was the real breakout star in the impeachment hearing. She represents the U.S. Virgin Islands in Congress, and like Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents D.C., she can't vote. She can only speak. Well, the U.S. Virgin Islands has only 100,000 people, which is a little below the threshold for statehood. You could add it to Guam, I suppose, and call it Islandia. But let's just take the U.S. Virgin Islands. I mean, it was good enough for Abraham Lincoln. It was good enough for Ulysses S. Grant. It was good enough for Benjamin Harrison. Three different presidents made states out of territories that had way too few people to be qualified for statehood. So let's add three states to the Union and get six new Democratic senators by adding Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. I think it could work. I think it could be a really big deal. Anyhow, we'll continue with more of the news of the day, as it were, right after this. We're hitting the top of the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option, even when Mercury's retrograde. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.